Focus on your breath. And let the Dharma talk be in the background. It's here to encourage you in getting into concentration. And it's not meant to be a distraction. So give 99.9% of your attention to the breath, just a little bit of attention to the talk. If there's something relevant to what's going on in your mind in the talk, it'll come right in. If it's not relevant, maybe good for somebody else. But you don't want it to disturb your concentration. Because what the talk is pointing at, that's what the word desana means in Pali, which is one of the words for Dharma talk. It's a pointing to something, making you see something. What you want to see is your mind in the present moment. But you can't focus directly on the mind right away. You focus first on the breath, because that's your anchor in the present moment. When you're with the breath, you're knowing you're in the present moment. And you find that the mind has a very quick way of modulating off into some other place, some other time. So you've got to learn how to control those modulations. Stay with the breath as consistently as you can, all the way in, all the way out, and in between the breath, you stay right there. And having this quality of continuous awareness. It takes some time because our attention span tends to be just in little bits and pieces. If we want to stick with something, we have to remind ourselves, okay, stick with this, stick with this. It doesn't stay naturally that long. The stitching together, that comes from mindfulness, the ability to keep something in mind. And those little moments of awareness, those moments of attention or alertness get stitched together, then they turn into concentration. This has a calming effect on the mind. Because otherwise the mind is always in doubt, what to do next, what to do next. And here you've answered that question for the rest of the hour. You're going to stay with the breath. You know, they're actually going to stay there, that's another thing. But this is the answer that you want to give each time there's a doubt in the mind. Where should I go now? Go back to the breath. This requires a certain amount of conviction in the beginning. Conviction in the principle that your actions really do make a difference. You are making choices in the present moment, and your choices will have an effect. So you want to make sure that that effect is good. And if you want the effect to have some strength, look at the mind needs strength too. If it's jumping all around all the time, it's not really strong. You want to develop this quality of continual awareness. As the mind builds up strength, it builds up momentum. And those little nagging doubts can begin to fall away. Otherwise, they overwhelm you. We're talking today about feeling crazy when you don't know what to do. That's precisely the issue. You don't know what to do, and you're just casting around. Your old answers may not be working now. And you begin to wonder if there are any good answers. But if you're going to come to know anything at all, you have to know your actions. That's a principle that you can't really deny. What are your actions going to do? If you're going to let the mind be all scattered all over the place, well, they don't have any strength and they don't have any consistency. You can't really test them. If you want to test the power of action of the mind, you have to learn how to make the mind consistent, staying right here. In other words, you find truth by being true. And at the same time, you make yourself the sort of person who can test things to see if they're true. If your awareness isn't consistent, how are you going to know your actions? How can you judge things? How can you see connections between cause and effect? You have to raise the level of your mind to something that's reliable. So this is how you do it. You make it consistent. You stay with one thing and learn how to keep it with one thing. Stay true to that decision you made at the beginning of the hour to stay with the breath. And things inside the mind will begin to settle down and sort themselves out. Of course, the meditation on its own is not enough. You need the container of your life. We talked about this today, too, how the precepts are a good container. When everything else is uncertain, you know killing is bad, stealing is bad, illicit sex is bad, lying is bad, taking intoxicants is bad. So you hold to that. That no matter how disappointed you are in other things in life, you don't want to be disappointed in the fact that okay, you let yourself get waylaid from what you knew deep down inside was right. So you learn how to avoid these actions. There's another list the Buddha gives when he talks about truths that are true across the board, what he calls categorical truths. There are only two. One is the Four Noble Truths, and the other is the principle that skillful action should be developed and unskillful ones should be abandoned. And he gives a list of what's skillful. Basically, you don't kill, don't steal, don't have illicit sex. That's skillful bodily action. You don't lie, you don't speak divisively, in other words, trying to break friendships apart. You don't speak harshly with the intention of hurting people's feelings. And you don't engage in idle chatter, the kind of talk that just, where you open your mouth and let whatever comes into your head go out the mouth immediately without any filter. And finally, there's three skillful kinds of mental action. No greed for the belongings of others, no ill will for yourself or for others. And having right view. And your right view means believing in the principle of action, that if you act in skillful ways, the results will have to come. They may come now, they may come a little bit into the future, they may come a long ways into the future, but the skillful results will come. The desirable results will come. If you act on unskillful intentions, then undesirable results will come. This particular principle is one the Buddha held to all the time, even before he was a Buddha. He would test different theories about what was true in the world. But the theory that your actions didn't matter was one he said wasn't even worth testing. How would you test something like that? And what honor would there be in being a human being if your actions had no value? So that particular view he just put aside. What he did test was other theories that talked about the power of human action to see what kind of happiness human actions can provide. And he tried a few false paths, but he finally found the path after trial and error. It required a lot of patience. But he wanted something that's really solid. And so to find that something that was really solid, he had to make himself really solid. So that meant when he found what he thought at the time was the best possible path, he would follow it truly, give himself to it. If it turned out it was wrong, well, then he gained very important knowledge. Then to try something else. So when you find a path that seems noble, some path that seems true, that asks you to develop all your good qualities, be true to that path. As for any doubts that may come up, you know that you have doubts, you say, but you learn how to deal with them in the same way that a scientist has doubts about things. You don't let it be debilitating. You just say, okay, let's figure out how to test this particular truth or this candidate for truth. Not even scientists have to have some working hypothesis. They have to believe that their actions make a difference. It's funny that a lot of scientific laws you hear that would seem to deny the power of human action. Everything is determined by material things. That's not really scientific, that's materialism. That what you are is just a bunch of chemicals, a bunch of atoms and molecules, and your awareness is just a byproduct of chemicals, You hear that those theories sometimes, but the scientists themselves don't act as if that were true. After all, if you design an experiment, you're responsible for the experiment, and you have the choice to design a good experiment or a bad one. They're assuming free will right there. They're assuming the power of action right there. Those are good assumptions. But then the other assumption is it really worthwhile to spend your time working out scientific truths, or is it better to put an end to suffering? And the Buddha talked about the Four Noble Truths being a categorical truth. It wasn't just four interesting facts about suffering. The simple fact that he made this the center of his teaching means that this is really important, and this is the big issue in life. We all want happiness, but we act in ways that cause suffering. We can change our ways. First, by trying to comprehend what the suffering is. What is it that's suffering? What does it mean to suffer? And then what do you do when you find that they're suffering? Well, you say you try to comprehend it. You don't run away from it. But to comprehend it, you need some strength, because otherwise it gets overwhelming. This is why you develop the path. That's the duty with regard to the Fourth Noble Truth. You try to see what it is that's causing the suffering so you can let it go. So you can realize the end of suffering. Notice each of these truths has a duty. Again, they're not just facts that are interesting to think about. They tell you, you've got this kind of experience, this is what you do. If you're having an experience of suffering, you try to comprehend it. There are moments of stillness in the mind, concentration of the mind, you try to develop those so they get more continuous. And wherever you see you're doing something that's adding unnecessary stress, you let it go, whatever that action is. When you get sensitive to your mind in this way, you get more and more sensitive to your physical actions, you get more sensitive to your words, and you find that your own mind becomes more and more reliable. And this is how you find what's reliable in life, is making yourself reliable. So stay with the breath. Try to be as continuously with the breath as you can. If you find you've wandered away, or just drop whatever the thought is, come back. This is how continuity is developed, bit by bit by bit, step by step. But the space between the moments of concentration, the gaps get shorter and shorter, and to find the concentration gets more consistent. It's the same concentration, simply that you're able to bridge the gaps. So stay here as continually as you can, because it's in the continuity that you see things and understand things and confirm things that you wouldn't have been able to otherwise.